Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC Studios, it's Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast. It's Friday, May 13th. We begin today with our Friday Ask the Mayor segment. Well, no, not quite. It's a Friday Ask the Former Mayor segment, my questions and yours, for Bill de Blasio, his first appearance here since leaving office, and a little like old times, as he did come on every Friday for most of his mayoralty, as many of you remember. The reason we invited him back for today is that he has an article in The Atlantic on mistakes he believes he made as mayor that he wants Joe Biden to avoid as president, especially to help Democrats retain their congressional majorities in the midterm elections. So we'll talk some about New York City in the post-de Blasio era as well, but mostly national politics here. And good morning, Mr. Mayor. Feels like old times. Welcome back to WNYC.
I feel young again, Brian. It's good to be with you. And I think back fondly to our dialogue over many years. So thanks for having me.
We human beings are funny creatures, you know. We can get nostalgic for something we consider the good old days when it wasn't even 5 months ago. Aren't we funny creatures?
We are very funny creatures. Although I'll tell you, it feels really, really different just humanly. That is something I've been reflecting on a lot. You know, they used to call, I think it was back during the 60s, that someone coined the phrase that mayor of New York City is the second toughest job in America.
Yeah.
And when you're in the middle of it, it is just a blur how intense it is, how fast, how never ending. And to actually sort of get back to life, you know, to family, friends, normalcy, it feels like a long time ago on one level. And I feel an empathy for my successor, because it's nonstop in a way that I don't think any other experience I've ever had in my life even comes close.
Well, we'll come back around as we go to some observations you may have about what your successor, Eric Adams, is dealing with. But I do want to get to the premise of your article, which is more nationally angled and something that maybe you wouldn't have wanted to say out loud when you were coming on here on Fridays when you were in office. You wrote, "When it comes to being unpopular, I'm unfortunately somewhat of an expert." Why did you write those words?
Well, Brian, I had time to think. And, you know, the piece, I did an op-ed for The Atlantic that really was motivated by feeling an empathy for what Joe Biden's been going through, and a sense that I saw things that could be changed, mistakes that could be fixed that I thought would really help him and help the Democratic Party. And I felt it deeply. I saw sort of this pattern. And I didn't want to say, "Hey, Joe Biden, fix your problems." I wanted to say, "I'm going to acknowledge my own problems in a job that, you know, pales in comparison to the presidency, but does at least have some parallels to the intensity of the presidency." And just say, I realize I got lost in the weeds. One of the phrases I put in the op-ed really typifies it to me. I mistook policy for popularity. And I think Joe Biden, a lot of the times, is working on a wonderful policy. I think he's done extraordinary things in building an international coalition for Ukraine, for example. But the people don't see that work. It's behind the scenes. And the people are dealing with kitchen table issues, really painful issues now, COVID and inflation and so much fear. Joe Biden needs to speak to them and come back to them and speak to them, as it were, at their kitchen table, in some ways, as FDR did famously with the fireside chats, and focus much more on helping people understand where he's taking us. And I don't think I did that well enough in the last years in particular as mayor. And that's why I wanted to write the piece, to say I fell into this trap. I don't think you have to, Mr. President. I think there's still time to turn that around.
In the case of yourself, you seem to say that you did give the city a clear sense of where you were taking them in your first term, less so in your second term. In the case of Biden, do you think he gave the country a clear sense of where he's taking us early on, but has stopped doing so?
I think that let's put it into sort of three phases. The election was such an extraordinary contrast, Biden and Trump. that I don't even think it was so much about vision. It was about the contrast of two very different philosophies and, human beings. The early months of the administration dominated by fighting back COVID, I think that's when there was a tremendous sense of direction because there were immediate missions to be accomplished. I think he did an outstanding job on stimulus, on vaccination, obviously later on infrastructure. But I think the third phase has been when the energy and momentum of that initial surge was over and we confronted a new set of problems, obviously particularly inflation, but a lot of other uncertainty beyond inflation. I think it was time for the president to double down on a broader vision of where America could go and where America would go eventually and how his approaches would take us there. But I think what happened conversely, and it's a variation of what happened to me, is he kind of got pulled into the Washington day-to-day battles, the disappointments with Build Back Better, et cetera. And the conversation got insular, it got internal, it much, much less about relating back to what people were going through. And it got defensive. This is another mistake I feel I made often when I felt I was doing meaningful work and I was getting a lot of criticism rather than saying, okay, well, some of that must be I'm not articulating my work well enough or maybe I'm not focusing on the right priorities. I would get very defensive. I think it's human and natural, but I don't, forgive it in myself. I think Biden falls into that kind of defensive speech quite easily. In the end, here's the other thing I say in the Atlanta piece, he's actually a really good communicator. In other words, it doesn't have to be this way because Joe Biden is a very accessible human being. He has a word, I don't know if it's pure English, but it's used a lot, relatable. And he's relatable across the spectrum. We've talked about all the different demographic dynamics happening in American politics, but a voter who went from, for example, voting for Barack Obama to later on voting for Donald Trump, that's still a voter that Joe Biden can speak to. And he obviously can speak profoundly to the base of the Democratic Party. He can speak to progressives. His vision has been very progressive in many ways. I love his communications ability, but I want him to communicate a simpler, clearer vision than I've heard from him.
This has been a problem for Democrats for a long time, hasn't it? I'm going to play a clip from 15 years ago that may or may not surprise you. Chuck Schumer came on the show for a book he wrote back in 2007. And you know what the title was? It was Positively American, Winning Back the Middle Class Majority, One Family at a Time. Winning back the middle class as something he felt the Democrats had lost even way back then. And one of the things he talked about from that book was that the Republicans were better at boiling down their policies to values-based slogans that you can say in eight words. So listen to this 30-second clip of Chuck Schumer here in 2007.
I say in 2004, Bush won with eight words. War in Iraq, cut taxes, no gay marriage. Now, each of those is a specific issue that, Bush staked his political reputation on, tied to a deep value. War in Iraq, strong security. Cut taxes, shrink government. No gay marriage, family values. And I asked the question, what are our eight words? Well, when you think about it, we're not close to it yet. This book is an attempt to get to our eight words, because in 2008, we need them. We're not going to have to just run on an anti-Bush platform.
Chuck Schumer here 15 years ago. That is so eerily reminiscent of this moment for me. You don't have Trump. The party doesn't have Trump to run against in 2022. So why is this a perennial problem for the Democratic Party?
Well, look, I agree. I think Chuck Schumer's summary is powerful. I would also remind all of us the 2004 election was winnable, and I think we were hindered in part, with all due respect to John Kerry, by some of his communications problems. Joe Biden doesn't have that problem. I want to note this. I'll answer your question, but I really want to note it. We have a leader who can connect with middle-class and working-class Americans more than we often have had, and that counts for a lot. I just wanted to do it. So, look, I think right now, and I don't know if it's eight words, but I'll tell you, the right this minute, the rights of American women are being stolen before their very eyes. I think fighting for the rights of women, fighting for a woman's right to choose, right there. You talk about the eight words or three words or whatever the hell, right there is going to be one of the definitional elements of the 2022 midterm election. And that is a voting issue. That is an emotional, personal issue. Lower health care costs, you know, lower prescription drug costs. You know, these are really, here's the other one, Brian. You want something that polls through the roof, and not just among Democrats, even among independents and Republicans? Tax the corporations and the wealthy. Joe Biden actually has a plan, which even Manchin has been positive towards elements of, for higher taxes on corporations and billionaires, a place Republicans never can go. So it is a Democratic problem, but it's not for lack of subject matter. You know, in the Atlantic piece, I talk about 2018. In 2018, Democrats running for Congress with shocking consistency and unity talked about health care, protecting affordable health care, because the Republican Party had been attacking Obamacare and Medicaid expansion. And so Democrats everywhere said, we're going to protect your health care. It was extraordinarily powerful and clear, and it was believable, because no one thought the Republicans were going to protect their health care, and everyone believed the Democrats had thrown down on the topic of health care. So Chuck Schumer's formulation, I think, is right, that what pains me, Brian, is we never lack contrast with the Republicans, especially in the age of Trump, and we never lack subject matter. We lack simplicity and clarity, and it is a fixable problem. It's a fixable problem, and it's particularly fixable with a president who can communicate with empathy.
We did a call in after that Schumer segment for Democrats. What are the eight words that they would have run on back then? That was 2007, before they knew Barack Obama was going to be the candidate in 2008 or anything. And maybe we should do it again after this segment with you, or during this segment with you. Listeners, what are the eight words in Chuck Schumer's terminology from 15 years ago that the Democrats should be running on, or any other response you have to what Bill de Blasio is saying here? Before we go to our first caller, I'll just say one thing about health care. Democrats don't bring it up very much, but they've won on Obamacare. Remember when the big issue, one of the biggest issues for the Republicans, was repeal and replace? And then when Trump was president, they actually tried to do it. And John McCain cast that tie-breaking vote when he was dying in the middle of the night and saved Obamacare. Well, they don't talk about repealing Obamacare anymore, because it's gotten established as a popular thing, and even more so in the pandemic. So the Democrats won on that. We don't hear about it very much. And when you bring up prescription drug prices, you know, obviously that's taking a back seat now to other kinds of inflation, to Ukraine, to other things that are going on, crime. But is there something Biden could do by executive order that would lower prescription drug prices?
You know, I want to just challenge one piece there, Brian,
sure,
with real respect.
Sure.
I think one of the things I learned along the way in political life is, if you can't do everything, do something. And I do think on the issues you just laid out, on prescription drug prices, I don't know enough about the executive order side of it, but I do know there's still a vote that could be won. From everything we've heard from the House and the Senate, and even from the very interesting reality of Joe Manchin, this is still a winnable issue.
Right, in Congress,
and it would make
so
it profound.
They can tout
in Congress
that as a win as they run in the midterms.
Correct, and maybe if, you know, there had been a less expansive approach to Build Back Better, this could have been done already. You know, who knows? That's Monday morning quarterback. But what we can say is that really does appear to still be a winnable issue, and it's a place where Republicans will not go, because they will always be on the side of the pharmaceutical companies, not everyday Americans. And then when the other issues you raised on Ukraine, I think, which is a huge issue, but it's not so much a kitchen table issue, but Joe Biden has a whole lot to show there because he really has led the world. And, the polling in the last few days is showing more and more people connecting with that. I just wrote a piece, op-ed in Newsweek on this point, that I think people are starting to see our reality as Americans differently because we're actually leading in a productive way, helping an embattled people. On inflation, I think we all know that's going to be a tough one. It's supply chain, it's COVID, it's lots of things contributing to it. But I think then show people a bigger vision, even if it's not going to be not going to be resolved in this month. Put forward a simple plan of how we're going to overcome it over time. I found that people really pay attention if you present them an honest assessment. If you say, I'm not going to be able to solve this month, but we can do a lot better, in the course of this year, we can do a lot better next year. He's done some of the right things already in terms of trying to rein in gas prices. But it's really, to me, it's about just incessantly talking about what people care about and making sure they know you care too. And I think sometimes my assessment of the Biden approach and message is, again, it goes right to sort of policy. It goes right to, the mechanics of government. When I think what people want to hear is, I got you. I understand how much you're hurting. And this is what I'm going to do right now. And this is what I'm going to do that's going to solve some of the bigger problems. But to his credit, what he's done on COVID, what he's done on infrastructure, what he's done on Ukraine, he actually has a foundation to work from, which should not be underestimated. And that's a lot of what people will see when they judge the Democratic Party.
Pierre in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with former Mayor Bill de Blasio. Hello, Pierre.
Hi, thank you for letting me share my opinion.
Sure. What you got for us?
I just wanted to say I actually completely agree that I think Democrats are getting stuck in minutiae. And I think the one thing that was really great during COVID that former Mayor de Blasio said was that people were kind of mobilized. And now that we're kind of getting back to normal, ironically, when everyone was home and locked down and individually in their apartments, we were all mobilized. And now when we're getting back to normal, everyone's too busy to be mobilized. And I think people are feeling overwhelmed. And I think it's true. We need to have some very basic messaging. People are still really terrified that they're losing their rights. And I think the last couple of weeks have really brought that home. And I had a diverse group of 12-year-old middle schoolers from District 15, by the way. And were explaining, and they were telling me yesterday during the protest that they were afraid that, if this right erodes, everything else is going to follow. And I think, the parents feel that way too. And I think if we can talk about, Republicans aren't the only ones to own the argument of saving freedom and saving rights and being patriotic. And I think we need to kind of talk about that a little and invest in that a little. And I also agree with the prescription drugs. When we're as parents having to get EpiPens that are, $400 and they're required, things like that are on your mind, whether or not you realize it. So I think a lot of folks are really feeling it in every generation. And so I think this is something that's in every party. So these are all really good points to kind of focus on. And I think it's really a good time for us to really delve into it right now while things are slowing down. I think taking advantage of the summer rather than thinking people are sleepy during it is actually going to help us.
Mayor de Blasio?
That's a wonderful analysis, Pierre, and I really appreciate it. And I think this point you made about people being mobilized, that's a really interesting word choice. I think the president has a chance to sort of create that vision of mobilizing people for where America needs to go. And that means protecting rights, which I agree with you is profoundly patriotic and sort of the essence of the American experience is protecting people's rights. And they are being stolen at this moment. But I also think it's mobilizing to, put the country back together post-COVID. I think it's mobilizing against climate change. I think there is a chance for Biden still to pick up, you know, he obviously emulates FDR. He was literally, you know, born and raised in the aftermath of the New Deal. And it's in his bloodstream, you can tell. He has a chance here to say, this is what America could become. And I mentioned this other piece in Newsweek on Ukraine, because his leadership on Ukraine is actually the closest thing I have seen in decades to America in a good way, in a noble, democratic, small d democratic way, leading the world and building an extraordinary coalition. And I think there is in that a sense of pride that it could regenerate. That idea of how about we create a country that we all start to feel much better about. Joe Biden's actually well positioned to offer that vision. But what I see him doing, and I looked over the last few weeks, and he did one event on internet affordability, then he did another event on the Javelin missiles for Ukraine, and he did another event on competition with China, and none of it fit together. Hmm. There was no sense of where is this taking us. If he can shift, in my opinion, to that bigger vision of mobilizing us as a people for a common cause, he actually could tap into something.
Well, it's great to have you back again, and I'm sure it won't be the last time, so thank you as always.
I enjoy these times together, Brian, and thank you, as I told you my last time back in December, thank you for giving New Yorkers this dialogue, you know, on so many topics. It's really cherished out there. I can tell you, people say to me all the time that your show means a hell of a lot to them.
Thank you so much. Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.